Hi there. Tor Jazz, here we are, session 7, laying down the record. Parshas Ki Tsetse. This is very exciting because, as you know, doing these recordings, I'm trying my best to cover topics which are difficult topics, real questions that we have in the Parsha, not just sort of to gloss things over, not to give apologetics, but to ask the questions that really bother me and hopefully other people, and give answers which will hopefully be satisfying. Now, Ki Tsetse is a huge Parsha, and there's so many different topics here which could be delved into, and, well, I mean, this is really a Parsha of difficult concepts, you know. There's the hated wife, the rebellious son, what we do with bodies which have been killed through capital punishment. There's kilayim. There's yibum, levirate marriages, right? A lot of difficult mitzvahs here. However, I think the queen of all difficult mitzvahs, the one that we're going to have to spend our little time together wrapping our head around, is the Eishes Yefes Toar, the captivating captive. The Yefes Toar, the woman of the beautiful diploma. No, just kidding. The woman of beautiful form is a concept which is so difficult, I think, for us to sort of digest, relate to, understand, and we're going to try to do that. Okay, we're going to look at three beautiful mahalchim in how to understand what's happening over here in the Torah. Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, and the Rambam. Hopefully we'll have time for everybody, right? I'm going to do my best not to make it a sugya shura. I want to talk about the Yetzer Hara and how we deal with the Yetzer Hara and those concepts which are coming up in the sugya. But, you know, it's just one cannot, one has to mention that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, the holy, holy Or HaChaim, only feels comfortable explaining this entire concept on the level of Sod, only through deep Kabbalistic notions. Now, we're going to do our best. We're going to be at the beginning of the Parday, standing at the front of the orchard in the level of Pshat, hopefully for the most part. Let's see. Let's do our best. Let's see what we can do over here. Okay, basically, what's happening? Ki Tsetse L'Milchama L'Oyvecha, when you go out to war against your enemies, and the Lord, your God, places them into your hand, and you capture captives. Ve'ra'ita b'shivya, and you see amongst the captives, Eishes Yefes Toar, this woman beautiful of form. We're going to have to point out over here that the phrase Yefes Toar is a very specific phrase, right? We didn't just call her an Isha Yefa, we called her an Eishes Yefes Toar. That specifically, we can look over here into the Targum, right? Where are we? Right? She's called Shapiras Chezu. She's beautiful of appearance. You could go over to Rashi and Parshas, Rashi over there in Vayetze, that Rashi describes Rachel Yefes Toar means, again, beautiful of form. It's specifically, it's an external, it's a physical beauty. So you see this woman, or not you, but this person goes out, he sees this beautiful woman, V'chashakta bo, and he has a tremendous yearning to be with her. V'lakachta lecha le'isha, and he takes her for a wife. V'hevesa el toch be'secha, right? He brings her into his home. V'gilcha et rosha, right? What's the first thing you do with any girl you bring home? You shave her head. V'asta et tziparneha. We're going to go over here with the understanding that it means you grew out her nails, like Rabbi Akiva in the Gemara in Yevamos. V'hesira et simlat shivya. You remove her clothes of captivity, me'aleha. That is, you put her in either standard clothes, local clothes, and not the ones of that foreign nation, or you put her in mourning clothes, depending on which path we're taking over here. V'yashva b'veisecha uvachta saviyah v'asimah yerach yamim. She sits in your house, she mourns her parents for a month, and afterwards, tavo aleha, you can have relations with her. Uvialta v'hayta l'chi'isha, right after the relations, she becomes the man's wife. Okay, so again, in brief, this fellow goes out to war, sees this captivating captive, falls for her, needs to be with her, takes her for a wife, brings her into his home, shaves her head, grows out her nails, changes her clothes, allows her to mourn for a month, and then she becomes his wife. and they live happily ever after. Isn't that just such a beautiful story? Okay. Now, the first thing we have to understand is what exactly is the Torah coming to tell us, right? What's happening over here? Because certainly any woman that wishes to convert can convert, and you can marry her, right? Whether you're at war, you're not at war, whether she's a captive, she's not a captive, a woman can choose to convert and then be married. So the first thing we're understanding, right, the basic understanding is that this woman is not choosing to convert. That is to say that whatever is happening here is whether or not it is with her consent. So, of course, that's going to cause a lot of alarms for us. We're all sensitive boys. We all grew up, most of us, raised liberal. You know, I mean, I guess even conservatives don't exactly like that sort of a, right-wing Democrats don't exactly like that sort of notion of forcing your beliefs onto another person, okay, in all fairness. That with even without her consent, right, he is taking her to be a wife. And that's a difficult concept because in the end of the day, we are Jews, and we have sensitive neshamas, and we don't like to force things on other people, especially when, you know, you look at the concept of kiddushin in Judaism is not something you can be done by force. It's something that both parties have to be willing, consenting parties for. So here it seems to be that we have this parsha that's coming along and allowing us to marry this woman, specifically during wartime, whether she consents or not consents. And as I mentioned, it's a beautiful story. As you can just imagine, everybody's sitting around the Shabbos table, right, turning to your friend and saying, Shimon, oh, where did you meet your wife? And Shimon saying, well, Christine over here, she's my Yefes Tohar, you know. Oh my goodness, really? Rivki, did you know that? Rivki, did you know that Shimmy and Christine is a Yefes Tohar relationship? Now, Christine, what was that like? Was it love at first sight? Right? Christine says, no, actually, I thought I would hate him forever. But, you know, until you experience Stockholm Syndrome, you just never know how true it is. Now, Baruch Hashem, we're married. We have five beautiful kids. Okay. So, again, this is not a case of a standard gyuris, right? This is a case of an unconsenting marriage. And we have to understand how it could be that the Torah could all of a sudden come along and create such a case of this relationship. Let's look at Rashi. A person goes out to war. This is Rashi on the Chumash. Right? So first of all, the Rashi points out this must be talking about a Melchemet Rashut. This is a not the wars of conquest over the land of Israel, but rather a war with an enemy state who does not wish to make peace. You take captures, captives, Shivita Shivyo, right? You capture captives. Rashi points out, the double language is in order to also include Canaanites. So now, let's remember, let's put it in context. We're not just talking about any non-Jewish woman. We're even talking about a Canaanite Jewish woman, which means we're referring to the mother of all shiksas, right? That's about as non-Jewish as a non-Jew can get, whatever that means. Okay, so now you take her for a wife. Why is the Torah coming along and telling us what almost sounds like a mitzvah, right? Go out and take this woman for a wife. I mean, that's just bizarre. Why would the Torah encourage us in any way to go take out this woman who's not even yet converted and take her as a wife? So says Rashi, Lo dibra Torah elen keneged yetzer hara. The Torah was only speaking in correlation, in speaking to the yetzer hara, the evil inclination. Sheim ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu matira yisena b'isser. That were Hashem not to permit her, not to make this relationship a permissible relationship, a permitted relationship, therefore this person would go and marry her in a forbidden fashion. Interesting. So what are we saying? If we step back, take a moment, it sounds like we're saying that the reason why we have this whole parsha, the reason this parsha exists at all, seeing this woman, this captive woman, during wartime, is because, for whatever reason, anyway, this person is going to want to marry her. He's going to want to be with her. So the Torah set up the opportunity to make it a permissible action that he could be with her in a permissible way instead of having her marry her, of marrying her in a forbidden way. Now, of course, we have to understand what exactly that means, because if she could convert, then that would anyways be permissible. So what it sounds like, and the way that if you look at the Gemara over in Kiddushin on Daf Chav Aleph Amud Beis, which is the main area where this is discussed, at least this aspect of the Yefas Torah is discussed, what that means is that the Torah permitted him to have relations with her outside of marriage before the conversion process even begins, right? That's what we're saying over here. Certainly, that's the way the discussion on the Gemara and Chafaf Amud Beis goes over there with a Kohen, whether or not he's permitted to her, she's permitted to him on the first time they have relations or on the second time they have the relations, meaning everybody agrees that certainly on the first time, right? This is the first possibility in the Gemara, that everybody agrees that the first time, of course, he's allowed to have relations with her. The question is not whether or not he can be married to her, being that he's a Kohen. Now, how could it be that everybody agrees that he's allowed to have relations with her for the first time? So over there, the Gemara says, because the Torah was only speaking to his Yetzer Hara. That is to say, this person had a tremendous Yetzer Hara. And therefore, the Torah came along and permitted him to have relations with this woman, even though, really, it should have been usher to him. But after the Yetzer Hara goes away, he cannot be with her a second time, since she would now be a standard Gioris. And a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Gioris. He's not allowed to marry a convert. Now, as the Gemara continues, we're just going to see Rashi, how he speaks this out in the Gemara over here. Tanu Rabbanan, right? The continuation on the very bottom of Chafal Bama Beis is talking about now just a standard Yisrael, a standard Jew, not a Kohen. And again, we have this phrase, right? Lo dibra Torah ela keneged Yetzer Hara. The Torah was only speaking to a person's Yetzer Hara. When it permitted this whole business, it wasn't an encouragement. It wasn't something that we want every Jew to do. But the Torah is acknowledging the reality of the Yetzer Hara that a person has. And the Gemara continues over here. Mutav shiachlu Yisrael basar tmutot shchutot va'al yochlu basar tmutot nevelos. Okay? So the Gemara is saying it is better that a person should eat meat which is endangered. That is to say, not endangered meat, because anyways, panda bears are not kosher. But rather, that we're talking about an animal which is in danger, that could very possibly die soon. And better that you should shecht this animal than allow it to become a nevela. Or really, it sounds more like the Gemara is saying, you're going to eat it anyways, right? So if you could shecht it, better that you should eat it shechted than not shechted. Now, what's the difference? Shechted, not shechted. What's wrong with it? What's not wrong with it? Rashi says over here, he's coming about a praise which is said about the prophet Yechezkel, that he never ate basar pigul, and the Gemara understands this situation. That is to say, an animal which was in a dangerous situation. Now, we're not talking about a trefa, because a trefa is certainly not kosher. This is a lower level of kashrut, right? It's like finding a kosher symbol on some package from some country you never heard of, right? Kosher by the Beit Din of the island of Mali, okay? If you're going to eat it anyways, better to buy the package with the hechsher than the one without. You're going to eat it anyway, so even though it's not praiseworthy to eat this sort of a meat, better to shecht it and to eat it in this level of lower level of kashrut than to eat it in a way which is not kosher at all. So again, we're coming and seemingly solidifying, verifying this approach, right? If she's a giorit, if she's converted, there's nothing forbidden about it. So what are you doing? It must be that you are anyways going to have relations with her. So the Torah is coming along to find a way to permit her, because better that this person should have her in a way which is permissible than in a way which is forbidden. Now that, of course, should send off a lot of alarms and bells, because, you know, it's very strange. We don't have any other place in the Torah where God seems to be making concessions to the evil inclination, right? Did you ever hear of a double bacon cheeseburger that if you follow a certain routine, you stick a kippah on it and give it payas and sing hatikvah while you eat it, that all of a sudden it's kosher? Because you know it better that you should eat a kosher bacon double cheeseburger than do it anyways when it's not kosher, right? So it's a very strange scenario that you're going to do it anyways, so God is retroactively permitting it to you, because better you should do it in a way that's permissible than a way that's forbidden. Okay, I'm going to take a breath. Let's relax. Okay, good.
Let's look at Rashi.
Actually, let's in the continuation of the Gemara over to Rashi. So now, the Gemara at the very end over here, we're on Chaf Beis Amud Aleph, right before the double dots. The Gemara is learning from the phrase in the Chumash, Veheveta el toch beisecho. You bring her into your home. Melamed, the verse is coming to teach us, Shelo yelachtzena b'milchama, that a person shouldn't put pressure on her, force her, during the battle, during the time of war. What does that mean? In what way should you not force her, in what way should you not pressure her during the time of war? Now, if we're the Rambam over here, right? The Rambam, if you want to go peek over there in Hilchos Malachim, Perichet, I'd like to open it up because anyway, we're going to look at the Rambam in a little bit. I think this is in Halacha. The main part is in Halacha Beis, but I think this part over here about Tlachtzena is in Halacha Gimel or Dalet. Okay, let's see, where are we? Okay, Halacha Gimel. The end of Halacha Gimel, you're not allowed to force her during war. The Rambam says that you're not allowed to force her, meaning through this whole process of conversion during war, right? Taking her home, shaving her head, all this thing. You have to take her to an empty, quiet place. Oh, sorry. You can't have relations with her in the middle of the battle. You have to take her to a quiet, empty place, and that's where you're allowed to have relations with her. Rashi says, Lo yelachtena b'milchama lavo aleha. Rashi seems to imply that you cannot force her to have relations during the battle at all, whatsoever. So if we're understanding Rashi correctly, and this is the way that the Mefarshim are going to understand Rashi, its meaning is that you must first bring her into your home, go through the entire process, right? Bring her into the house, shave her head, make a family project, invite the kids, grow her nails out, change her clothes, allow her to mourn for 30 days, and only then can you have relations with her. Okay? So again, we understood that the Pashut Pshat, the basic understanding, seemingly, of this entire thing, the reason the Torah is telling us the whole story, is because this person is so overwhelmed with Yetzer Hara, he's having her before she's had the chance to convert. Because, as Tosfos is going to ask, three great kashas on Rashi, we're only going to do the first two. The first one is, wait a second, we said this whole thing, the whole idea the Torah is teaching us over here, is that this verse came in a unique, special situation to deal with a person's Yetzer Hara, that is to say, his Yetzer Hara is unstoppable, he's going to do this anyways, we have to make it kosher. But Rashi, according to you, in what way do we quell this person's Yetzer Hara, right? He never did the Maisa. He never had relations with her. He's going to have to take her home, go through this process. It's going to take at least a month before he actually has relations with her. So question one, in what way is the Torah dealing with a person's Yetzer Hara according to Rashi's approach? Question two that the Balei Tosfos are going to ask on Rashi is, why is the Gemara calling her Basar Tzmutos? Why is she being called this, low-level, barely kosher meat? Or, okay, question, well, that depends on whether you shecht it or not. But why is she being called meat that's in danger? According to Rashi, if you bring her into the home and you go through the entire process, right? So the way the other Mefarshim are going to understand it, by the end of this process, she's now a Gioris. She is now a convert. So at that point, she's fully permissible to him. So why is the Gemara calling her meat that's in danger? Why is it comparing her to Basar Tzmutos? Okay. So now, before we answer up Rashi, and Tosas, the Balei Tosas themselves answer up some answers for Rashi, let's look at Rabbeinu Tam's approach. And let's start to gain a little bit of insight into what's happening here in the Parsha, how we're dealing with the Yetzer Hara. Let's try to get a little bit of clarity because, there's only so long we can hang on, right? Okay. So, near Rabbeinu Tam, Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam as saying the following. Nira l'Rabbeinu Tam debir rishonim muteras b'melchama aval biyashnia asura ad shte bebeso giores. Rabbeinu Tam sees, understands what the Torah is saying as following. The first time he has relations with her, it's permissible, and even during a time, the time of war on the battlefield itself, right? That's the whole point of what we're saying. The Torah is coming to deal with the Yetzer Hara. However, biyashnia, if he wants to have relations with her again, asura achete bebeso giores, that is forbidden until she's in his home and converted. That means to say, with her consent. So according to Tosfos, the whole parsha over here is saying, shouldn't say to Tosfos, to Rabbeinu Tam, is saying as follows. A person goes out to war. He's totally overwhelmed with his Yetzer Hara. He takes this captive prisoner female home with him. I'm sorry. He has relations with her there at the moment. Now, his Yetzer Hara has quelled, it's calmed. He's able to think clearly. The Torah prescribes a four-step process for him in order to convert her and marry her. That is to say, you can't treat her like any other regular Gioris now. She can't just say, okay, I'm ready to be Magayer, I'm ready to take on Torah mitzvahs, and at that point she becomes permitted to him. Rather, she must go through this process in order to be permitted. Right? That's what is coming out of from Rabbeinu Tam, that she's not permitted again until she's fully Magayer. And the Torah brings us through this process. These verses can't disappear. Right? This is in opposition to other opinions, the Ramban and others, that at any point, if she accepts Judaism, we stop the whole process. But it sounds like, from Rabbeinu Tam, that she must now go through this process if he wishes to be with her a second time. She's permitted the first time, and the second time is only after she completes the process of conversion. So what is the Torah exactly telling us? Like, what is this parsha all about, right? What are we learning? What are we growing from? I mean, let's just start like this, right? If we go back and we look at last week's parsha, what sort of people are we talking about over here that are going out to war, right? We have all these memories of different war films that we watched growing up. I mean, for those of us who, you know, watch those sorts of things growing up, and we think of hot-headed young punks running out there with a lot of energy to burn. But if you remember from last week's Parsha, from this week's Parsha, the type of person who goes out to war in a Jewish army, A, is generally married, right? Not only that, according to our Parsha, been married at least for a full year before he does anything involved with the war whatsoever. He hasn't, he's already built a home. He's already started to have some sort of income and some sort of industry. And this is a person who's a complete Baal Tshuva. That is to say, he has no sins hanging over his head. If he has any fear that there's sin that he didn't do tshuva for, right, that he hasn't received repentance for yet, he does not go to war. This is what a Jewish army looks like. Older, mature, righteous men. That's who we're talking about. So again, it just brings up all the difficulties of what's going on here with the Yetzer Hara, why it's so difficult, why it's a unique parsha just for him. Okay, great. Now, I think the best way to express it, I think, Rav Hirsch expresses it very nicely, right? If you're from Israel, he's the Rashir, Rashir Hirsch. It's just a hard word to say. I mean, acronym, Rashir Hirsch. The Rashir Hirsch, and if you're Israeli, you have to call him the Rashir Hirsch, talks about the sort of overall ambiance of going to war. Wartime is like no other time. It's not a typical situation. Not only is a person in an unfamiliar environment, not only does a person in fear, not knowing what's going to happen next, where he's going to get provisions from, what's around the next corner. But there's also, here we're talking about a conquering army, right? This captive isn't out in the middle of the field. She's in the cities, and the Jewish army is coming and capturing and conquering this city. So above all the other disorientation and confusion that comes to a person during wartime, there's a attitude, an ambiance, an air of hefkerus, right? Of destruction, of prikas ol, of throwing off the yoke, right? You allow a person to become destructive. It's very hard for them to find the line and stop. Now again, remember, we're talking about a person dealing with his Yetzer Hara. That means that in any other situation, a person is expected to deal with his Yetzer Hara. And a war of conquest, right, which is its own parsha, which we're not going to speak about, a war of conquest, he also is not allowed to have relations with this woman. It's only in this specific type of war, which is a war of Rashus, fighting against an enemy nation that doesn't wish to make peace. In that state where he's conquering, and part of the conquest and part of the destruction, and he's invading, and there is an element of hating these people because these are people who wish to destroy you, who don't want to live in harmony with you. And at that point, and you know, as psychologists tell us that, you know, rape, forcing yourself on a woman, is more about power and conquest than it is about any type of lust or sexuality, right? At that point, when he reaches this Yefes Toar, this woman who he has a tremendous desire to conquer her, to be with her, at that point, it's very hard for a person to stop his Yetzer Hara. It's a more difficult situation than a standard situation. So the way we're seeing it from the Bali Tosfos explain this Parsha, how it unfolds, is that the Parsha, the Torah, does not want this event to happen. It would rather it never happen. As a matter of fact, if you look at Rashi's language on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis at the bottom over here, in Rashi, Divrei Maskil Yefes Toar, he says, right, he's asking why the Torah talks about the fact that she's beautiful. That's an unnecessary detail. We don't really care. Just tell this woman he desires. So Rashi says, why are we calling her Yefet? Why are we pointing out that she's beautiful? Mashma mitoch she mitgaraba, because he's being pulled after her Yitzro, his Yetzer, his evil inclination is pulling him towards her. It's the beauty, machmas yofia. It's her beauty, that's the only reason he wants to be with her, because of externalities. Hitirala ubikoshi. The Torah permitted her ubikoshi, but it only through difficulty, meaning the Torah did not want to permit her. The Torah wanted her to stay forbidden, and we wanted this soldier to go back to base and to take a cold shower and to go home. However, the way that the Rabbeinu Tam is seeing the sugya, whatever happened, unfortunately, happened. This soldier did what he did. So now we ask the question, if so, why is the Torah saying, you know, permitting it? Going back and trying to find a way to permit this act, why don't we just treat him like any other person who was in a difficult situation, made a mistake, messed up, right? Why are we allowing it? Oh. So I think that Rabbeinu Tam is going to understand that, like everybody, the Torah is trying to teach us how one works with his Yetzer Hara. If we pan out a little bit into this Parsha is the source, is the makor for the notion of Avera Gureris Avera, at least one of the sources in the Medrash over here. Right? Rashi talks about what happens when a person is with a woman who is, right, our situation is a forced situation, and from that relationship there comes a child. And that, Rashi says, the reason the Torah put this Parsha of the Yefes Toar, of the captivating captive, captured, captivated, captive, right next to the Parsha of the hated wife, is to teach us that there is a succession over here. If a person allows one sort of negative, difficult situation in his life, it's going to breed another. One bad deed breeds another. Avera goreris avera. He's going to come to hate this woman. They're going to have a child. The child is going to understand the situation he's in. He's going to become rebellious and hateful. That's the Bensura Moreh. He's going to come to do horrible things. He himself is going to be liable for capital punishment, right? Things have a way of building, of developing a momentum. And just like later in the parsha, we're going to see the same concept in the opposite direction, mitzvah gereres mitzvah, that one mitzvah brings about another mitzvah. So too, when people do things which are negative, it causes other things which are negative. So now, this person has succumbed in possibly the most difficult situation a person could be in a time of war, in a time of pressure. He succumbed to his yetzer. He fell. He messed up. He did a mistake. Now what? So generally, when a person has that sort of a fall from grace, it's very hard for that person to recover. Normally he felt like, I made a mistake, there's nothing I could do, and normally this woman would stay forbidden to him. However, the Torah is saying, look, you made a mistake. I'd like to show you a way to make reparations. You can still take this same woman who you made a mistake with, and you can integrate her into society. That is to say that instead of feeling crestfallen, broken, destroyed, like you've messed up, the Torah found a way to give you a chance to work with your Yetzer Hara, because the nature of the Yetzer Hara, if a person doesn't use it correctly, is that it can kill him, it can crush him, it can keep bringing him to do more inappropriate things, one right after the other, right after the other. So again, were we able to, the Torah would never have this person do this thing in the first place. But after he did this thing, right, b'di'eved, right, after the fact, the Torah is saying, however, I don't want you to keep making the same mistake over and over and over again. Would you like to marry her? Let's do it properly. First of all, bring her into your home. And we're going to see that all the Mefarshim are going to understand this pattern similarly. Take her out of that foreign environment where you were drawn to her in the first place. Put her into a Jewish home. See how she interacts, what she looks like, how she is when she's in a Jewish environment. Do it for her sake, do it for your sake. Now get rid of all the externalities. Shave off her hair, grow out her nails, change her clothes, right? Rashi understands the reason we're changing the clothes is because women used to put on seductive clothes in order to draw the soldiers into having relations with them. You know, not much different than what happens nowadays in a lot of countries. And so you take off those seductive clothes, you put her in plain clothes, you give her a month to mourn, to decide what reality she wants to be a part of, and both of you have the opportunity now to make a decision with the air clear. Is this the right thing moving forward for both of us? So instead of a person falling down that cycle, going over and over, avera gereres avera, the Torah says it's working connected the Yetzer Hara. The Torah is working with the Yetzer Hara. It's finding a way to turn the momentum of the situation to allow the person to still do good, not to feel dejected, not to feel an outcast, allow him to fix this situation. And if at the end of the 30 days he decides not to marry her, she is a full gioris, she is a full Jewish woman, and she goes on her own as a Jewish woman into regular society. Okay, that is Tosfos. So now, the Rambam is like sort of a variation on the Tosfos. He's a little bit different, because the Rambam says the following. First of all, the Rambam counts Eishes Yefes Torah as one of the 613 mitzvahs. It's in the essay number 221, Resh Kaf Aleph. And I just found that very interesting. What's the mitzvah's essay over here? Because, you know, right? Like, the Torah doesn't want you to do this thing. So obviously, the mitzvah's essay is in order to permit her the second time around after the first action already happened. And as a matter of fact, look at the language in the Rambam. Over here, we're in Hilchos Malachim and Milchamos in the 8th chapter, in the 2nd Halacha. V'chen bo'el isha b'giyusa im takfa yitro. So too in wartime, right? We have to put in context of the first halacha, we're talking about wartime. If a person has relations with this non-Jewish woman, if his yetzer hara overwhelms him, however, aval lo yivol ata veyelech lo, he may not have relations with her and leave her. Ela machnisa l'toch beso, he must bring her into her house. Shenemar v'risa b'shiviyeshes of his Torah, etc. V'aser livol ata biashnia ad shiyisaena, he may not have second relations with her until he marries her. So it sounds from the language of the Rambam, right? You may not leave her and go on your way, that there is a positive commandment after the person has relations with her to now go ahead and bring her into his home. That is to say, it sounded like Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam said that it's permissible the first time and forbidden until the process. Here the Rambam seems to state that it is permissible the first time, but it's also forbidden to just leave her. You must take her into your home. So now the Rambam is going to have a slightly different take on the way the Torah is dealing with a person's yetzer hara. In the Parsha of the Sota, an adulterous woman, we have this concept that if a man sees the adulterous woman in her crestfallen state, right? She's got that little scarlet letter on her sweater. No, that's not us. Just kidding. He has got to become a Nazir, take on the vow, a Nazirite vow, to become a Nazir. I don't know how you say Nazir in English. I don't know how to translate that word. A Nazirite, a Nazarene. Just not that guy. So, why? Why does he have to do that? So the general understanding is because he has seen this woman in her fallen state, one has to be very careful not to allow themselves to see that sort of thing and register it anyway as being sort of a normal part of everyday life. When you see that sort of thing, you have to make it clear to yourself that that is not normal and it's not healthy and it's not something you do and want in your world. So you do something extreme to yourself to show yourself, to distance yourself from that sort of a behavior. So I think in the Rambam we have a similar idea. If a person himself falls, he makes this sort of a mistake. He does this thing which the Torah would rather he didn't do, but he did it. Now, says the Torah, if we were to leave this person as he is, he would continue to succumb to his yetzer hara, avera goreres avera, right? He would do one bad thing after the other. Therefore, the Torah says, take this inertia that you've had and do something productive with it. Bring her into your home, begin the process, try to make reparations, do something with it, right? How do you work with the yetzer hara? When the yetzer hara is active, when it pulls you in a certain direction, you've fallen. Don't stay down. Don't continue to fall. Rather, take that inertia and try to move it in a direction to do something productive with it. In this case, to marry this woman and to raise children with her. Despite the fact that you started from a negative place, you can still do something good over here. Okay, so that leaves us with Rashi. Rashi says that nothing can happen after the very end. So we had two big questions on Rashi, which is, first of all, in what way are we dealing with the Yetzer Hara? And second of all, why are we using the language of Basar Tmutot to describe her? So the first answer, Tosfos, the Bali Tosfos themselves bring, and they use those two magic words, Pas Basalo, he's got bread in his basket. Meaning, answering for Rashi, how could it be if this person's so overwhelmed with the Yetzer Hara, we describe the type of evil inclination, the type of desire as a person is driven to in a time of war. How can we now expect him to wait over a month before he does anything with this woman? In what way are we dealing with his yetzer hara? Tosfos says, because he has pas basalo. Now, I want to take a few moments just to talk about the notion of pas basalo, because it's such a big notion, it's such an important notion, and I don't know how well people understand it. I don't know how well I understand it, but I'm going to give it a shot. Now, pas basalo literally means that you've got bread in your basket. That is to say, I may not have bread in front of me, but I know I have bread in my basket, and that gives me a sort of calm, a sort of patience that I didn't have before, even though at the end of the day, I don't have bread in front of me in either situation, but at the very least, knowing that I've got bread in my basket allows me to feel calm about it. Now, for those who took economics courses, so that's not me, or business courses, there's a very similar concept which is discussed, which is called scarcity mentality. Now, what's scarcity mentality? Scarcity mentality is when a person has an outlook on the world that there are only limited resources in the world. There's only so much to go around. And therefore, if there's only limited resources in the world, that engenders certain feelings in a person. Makes a person anxious, makes a person obsessive, makes a person jealous, makes a person aggressive, makes a person irrational, means that they're more likely to act out of haste. So now, this sort of mentality, of course, if you want to talk about the certain person who loves this sort of mentality, it's marketers, right? Someone who works in marketing very much wants to create a scarcity mentality for their audience. Why? Because if a person looking at a product believes that this is a limited resource, it's something he must have, so he is more likely to act rashly and purchase the product even if he doesn't actually need it. By the way, we'll talk about the fact that the Yetzer Hara also likes to create this sort of outlook on the world and how Chazal deal with it. Okay, the counter is right next to me. That's the counter. No, the counter to scarcity mentality is abundance mentality. That is to say, when a person looks at the world and believes there's plenty to go around, right? There are enough resources for everybody, then that person comes from a calm, cool, collected place and is able to make decisions from a rational place. Now, Chazal speak about this concept quite brilliantly. Now, one Gemara that I recall, although it's been a long time since I've seen the Gemara, is a Gemara in Yevamos that speaks about the concept of pas basalo, that Rabba would come to new cities. And because Rabba was a great person, as we know, the greater the person, the greater his Yetzer Hara. I mean, for goodness sake, his name was Rabba. He was a great person. And he would become overwhelmed with his Yetzer Hara, and he would find a woman to marry him and then divorce her the next morning. That is to say that he never had relations with a woman. But because he had pas basalo, once he knew that this woman was permitted to him, he could have her, he was able to step back and stop obsessing over the situation. He was able to control his Yetzer Hara. Another similar example is by Yom Kippur. That if a person feels desperate to eat on Yom Kippur, crazed out of his mind to have food on Yom Kippur, you should allow the person to have food. And that often, just in permitting the person to have food, that in itself actually gives the person the peace of mind to make it through Yom Kippur. And the reason is, again, because he's able to finally stop obsessing over food. I'll give you a few more day-to-day sort of realities where this happens. When it comes to, I'm just talking to you about struggles that I see that people have on a day-to-day situation. When it comes to sleep, a lot of people struggle with sleep. This is a conversation I just had with someone the other day. And when you ask them, why don't you go to sleep on time? Why don't you go to sleep early? So people tend to say, because there's not enough hours in the day. That is to say that if you're coming from a belief that there aren't enough hours in the day, you feel crazed to get whatever you need, obsessed, done before you go to sleep because there's just enough hours, not enough hours in the day. However, when one steps back and takes a moment, realizes how silly that is, because in all reality, there's just as many hours in the morning as there are at night. But because a person has this scarcity mentality, he can't look at the situation rationally. He obsesses about getting certain things done. And normally, by the way, the sort of things that we're talking about happening late at night is like going through your Facebook feed, if you're a Moor rabbi, or, you know, checking your emails and sort of things which really should generally fall down to the lower end of your priorities list. That's one example. Another example, and this is one that I think about a lot, and I'll tell you why, because it's a conversation my wife and I have a lot, because this very much has to do with a lot of the work she does. And that is, my wife helps women have a normal, healthy relationship with food. See, dieting nowadays has become a way of life, a part of life, a tremendous multi-billion dollar industry. At the same token, the latest report from the American Pediatrics Association that came out has shown that the highest indicator for future eating disorders in children is dieting. That's right, dieting is a major contributing factor to eating disorders, and more than that, people who diet don't usually succeed, and one of the reasons is because anytime you have a scarcity mentality, you feel restricted, you are told that you may not have this food, it is forbidden to you, you begin to obsess over said food. Now that's a very powerful tool for the Yetzer Hara. When a person looks at something and all he can think about is the notion that this is forbidden to you, this is usher to you, a person can begin to obsess over having this thing. That's why you have some people who, unfortunately, there are religious Jews who have 613 obstacles that they have to deal with in their daily life. When a person has an outlook on mitzvahs as a restriction, as something which is forbidden for me, as something which I may not have, but, you know, it's something I want to do, they can begin to obsess about how they're going to deal and work around and all these sorts of things, and the Yetzer Hara becomes very powerful and very difficult to deal with. This is why the Gemara tells us that a person should not look at a piece of pork and say, efshi, right? Ugh, pork. Ugh, I can't have that. Who wants pork? Rather, a person should look at pork and say, efshi, yeah, I bet pork is delicious. Pork sounds good, right? Well, I don't mean the word. It sounds silly. But eating some pork sounds great, right? Efshi, I can do it. But what am I supposed to do? That a Kodesh Baruch Hu's will is that I don't, right? Meaning, a person looks at the world with abundance. All these things are great. The world is beautiful. Hashem gave me everything. However, Hashem has a certain will expressed in the world for my benefit because He loves me. And that means that I shouldn't eat this thing. There's a certain shift in outlook, the power of pas basalo, that a person can hold himself back when he looks at the world in a state of abundance and not in a state of restriction. When a person looks at mitzvahs as opportunities and not as restrictions, a person can then have the space, the breath, the clarity, the rationality to overcome his Yetzer Hara and do things because he knows that they're good for him and not because he has to. And of course, it doesn't stop just at the pas basalo. There's another four steps, which we mentioned earlier. A person has to be in milchama. A person's out. He's in an unfamiliar place. He's under tremendous pressure, right? First of all, know if you need to, you can. It's permitted. Hashem allows you to do this thing if you want. That creates the moment of pas basalo. It allows the pressure, the obsession, to go down from the Yetzer Hara to allow this person to come to a rational place. Now what? Now you bring her into your home, everything we discussed. You take her into a familiar environment, into a Jewish environment. You give her Jewish clothes. You take away all the externalities. You allow her to mourn, right? Her parents, her religion, whatever it is. You get to really see her for who she is. Now Rashi is going to come out with a totally different understanding of Dibra Torah Keneged Yetzer Hara than Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam. Because if that's the case in Rashi, what it means is that the Torah is actually creating a situation to stop you from doing this action in the first place. Remember, we spoke about Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam, that because of the overwhelming realities of war, a person can make this mistake, and therefore the Torah is finding a way for him to fix the mistake. However, according to Rashi, this does not happen during the time of war. Rather, by creating pas basalo, and by creating these four steps for a person to really see if this is a reality he wants for himself, the Torah is allowing him the ability to work with his Yetzer Hara and to stop the situation from actually happening in the first place. Okay, unfortunately, that's about it for now. But of course, there are certain lessons that we could take from this difficult parsha and try to apply to our lives, which is to say, when a person is working with his Yetzer Hara, if a person stumbles and falls, he should always pick himself back up, find a constructive way to channel that energy, that resource, that same thing. Even in the same area, if you can find a way to do something constructive over there, it's a great way to work with your Yetzer Hara instead of be pulled down by your Yetzer Hara. And we added in Rashi that if a person is able to change his outlook on Torah and mitzvos and not look like he's restricted, rather to see the world as a place of opportunities, to see the abundance and the goodness that Hashem has given him, then even in the most difficult situation in times of war, a person will be able to work with his Yetzer Hara to prevent himself from falling and from doing the Avera. And I hope that we got some clarity on a very difficult parsha. Have a great Shabbos.